Hello and welcome to the Aldi podcast for the February issue of the Aldi magazine, in which we've got a fantastic piece by Dr. Dora Thornton, who is the curator of Renaissance Europe and curator of the Waddesdon bequest at the British Museum. She's written a wonderful piece about what it's like being a curator. So, Dora, we've all heard of the British Museum, obviously. We've all heard of curators, but what exactly does a curator do?
Curators do very many different things, which is one of the reasons why so few people understand what we do. One of the most important things we do is respond to the public in all its varieties and globally. So we get messages and telephone inquiries and letters and personal visits from people from all over. And we help identify objects for opinions without valuations, of course. And we just answer their questions, which are often extraordinarily well-intentioned questions, even if they're supposedly ignorant. And that's really quite a charge. You have to be modest, you have to be flexible. You never know where these questions are going to come at you. They often come at you when you're walking around in a gallery or after a lecture. And there's an oddly professional aspect to being a curator some of the time. But also we do grow knowledge around and through the collections. And the amazing thing about being a curator is that you think with things, which means that you also have to work with documents and historical sources of different kinds, but you do articulate everything you think and argue through objects. And that's what makes it such a powerful communicative tool. Sometimes you can get a really visceral response to an object if you choose it correctly, and that can open up history for somebody. So there are these exciting aspects of the pure research, but there's always the public framework and always this wish to communicate at the heart of what we do.
And there's a very funny story in your piece about somebody coming in with a rare object from Pistum, the great Greek temple in Italy. Can you tell us about that?
Well, this was a very enthusiastic woman who'd been to Pistum, and she'd brought along a piece of gummy chewing gum that she'd prized off the temple, and she thought this was part of the ancient remains, and it was a matter of tact and diplomacy for the colleague who dealt with it and answered her questions. But it was just an example of the kind of stuff that happens all the time.
And people do literally walk through the door with objects, do they?
They do. They nowadays have to make an appointment, but they do come at you with things. And so you get a lot of metal detectorists with interesting finds. You get people who've inherited things. You get, very touchingly, elderly people who've got something and they just wonder whether it's valuable, and if it is, they want to give it to the museum. So you get children, of course, turning up with things, and often with their parents and grannies in tow. So you get every variety of scholars and students as well. So it's a really responsive job. And the questions, as I say, are really hard to predict.
And there's some very, very funny questions. Can you remember some of them that you're asked?
The ones that don't translate very well, like the polite Japanese professor who said, "Please show me your backside," when he wanted to find the way to the north entrance of the British Museum, which I thought was delightful. And, you know, just idiom problems, like the woman who rung up and said, "I have a bust, I need to clean it." We don't know what to say when those things come at you.
And when of those objects that come in, presumably sometimes there are some extraordinary ones. What, can you think of one of the most extraordinary ones that have been brought in?
Well, I had a really rare rosary just come in for an opinion that a man's grandmother had found in the floorboards of his house, an old Catholic family in Lancashire, and he knew it was important. It had been messed about over the centuries and worn by the hands of the faithful, so the women who'd been telling their beads with this rosary had worn it almost away and replaced some of the enamelling with sealing wax. So it was a really touching object. But some of the beads on this were almost unique. There's one other rosary like it, also from Lancashire, in the V&A. So to have a thing like that walk in, a 1500s set of beads with later alterations, worn with use, clearly an object of great devotion, is a really wonderful thing.
How extraordinary. Now, you're a curator of Renaissance Europe, but also of the Waddesdon bequest. Many listeners will have heard of Waddesdon, the fantastic Rothschild chateau in Buckinghamshire. But what's the history of the bequest here at the British Museum?
Well, the bequest that you see here is a very select collection made by Ferdinand Rothschild and left to us in 1898 at his death, which was at the very heart of Waddesdon Manor in the smoking room, the new smoking room. So when you come to this place, which I hope you will, and see this wonderful collection, you have to imagine these incredible glittering precious objects seen through wreaths of cigar smoke at Waddesdon. And of course, the smoking room is where you went to clinch the deal deal after dinner. So these objects had a social and a political life at Waddesdon, and I think they were used as part of the negotiation. I'm sure that some of the objects with royal provenances, royal British provenances, are the kinds of things that Ferdinand would quietly unlock from a cabinet and put into the hands of the future King of England and say, well, you see, sir, we were always very interested in the royal family here, and you'll enjoy this jewel. And he was very keen to feel that he was educating and opening up a new society with a new code of social communication through these objects at Waddesdon. He really thought he was doing something special there. And so this collection is a snapshot of the self-fashioning of this new dynasty, but it also tells us a lot about how they saw themselves as this new merchant banking dynasty, looking back to the great merchant bankers of the Renaissance.
How extraordinary. We've got this fantastic object, which you'll be able to see photos of on the Oldie website, which is called the Holy Thorn Reliquary from about 1400. Dora, can you tell us about it?
Well, this is a very small jewel, only about the height of my hand, a little bit more, and it's completely constructed around a thorn, supposedly from the crown of thorns worn by Christ at his crucifixion. It's made for Jean-Duc de Berry in Paris before about 1397, and we can tell that because there are two little plaques with his arms, which can only be his arms, which are set into the castle-like battlements at the base. And it's constructed in three parts as a miniature theatre. I particularly love the base, and I think I talk about this in the article, where you see the four angels blowing their trumpets to signal the Day of Judgment, and the dead are coming out of their tombs, perplexed and amazed at what's going on. There's a little nude figure raising her hands in gesticulation, and there's a coffin lid toppling over into the viewer's space. And above that, just beneath this encrusting of pearls and rubies, is a Latin label saying that it's a thorn from the crown of thorns. The thorn itself is at the centre, with Christ sitting in judgment with the Virgin and St. John Baptist, all in gold. You imagine yourself kneeling in front of this object with the apostles gesticulating all the way around. If you imagine kneeling in front of this and seeing it through incense and maybe music and candlelight and the whole thing flickering and coming to life and rippling with movement.
Would it have been on an altar? Would it? Where would it have been?
I think he carried it around with him. It would right. have had a custom-made case. It's a very personal object. And then you'd set it up and pray in front of it, presumably in the run-up to Lent and Easter. It's a really personal, devotional thing.
Extraordinary. And the actual thorn, where do we think that first came from? Where
was I couldn't that? Possibly yeah. tell you. It's supposedly a thorn from the famous crown of thorns that became a French royal treasure, and the Saint-Chapelle in Paris was built as a sort of spiky Gothic crown of thorns to contain it. And treasures, the single thorns were given as treasures by the royal family in France. And I imagine that this may have been a special gift that was made by Jean-Duc de Berry and then given away early in his lifetime, which is why it survived, because if it had stayed in Paris, it would have been melted down by the English, presumably, and used in different ways.
And you tell a wonderful story in the Oldie article about it was stolen, is that right?
No, it wasn't exact. Well, yes. What happened was that it went to Vienna by 1544, and we can trace it through the Habsburg royal inventories. In 1860, the monks who ran the spiritual treasury, where this object was, had an exhibition which included this piece, and then they sent this for restoration to an unscrupulous restorer called Salomon Weininger, who made a copy, not a very good copy, substituted the copy to the monks and flogged the original, which many years later found its way into this collection. And the story only really emerges in the early 20th century after Baron Ferdinand's death, and it was only after the Second World War that the Viennese brought their copy and put it alongside the original, and it became clear. We're still finding out bits about the story. A sensational series of trials of Salomon Weininger have been discovered, so that we know who exactly was working for him, probably in good faith. He was the unscrupulous one.
I see, yeah.
Who knew exactly how to place and market these pieces.
So where's the copy now?
The copy's still in Vienna.
Right.
I'm always hoping to get it here and put it alongside so people can have
pretty
a
good, is it, the copy?
It's very obvious when it's next to this object that it is a copy. It's very much a slavish rather than mechanical copy, but it's pretty well made.
And you tell a charming story in your piece about a little boy who explained about the reliquary to. Can you tell
yes.
me the story?
Well, it was just that this very small child really so young that his hand was still like a little starfish, you know, that wonderful moment when children are beginning to feel with their fingers. And he was here with his family, and he was obviously looking quite intently, but he was in that restless 3-year-old toddlery way. And I just pointed out to him the green mound with the figures coming out of their tombs. And he did a lovely sort of imitation of the figures and what they were doing, and was truly caught. His attention was truly caught for that rare half a minute, perhaps a little less. And you could see that it really registered with him, the human drama of that scene.
Lovely story. Yeah. Annabelle Sampson, our digital editor, is here. Do you have any questions for Dora?
How do you, with digital, people have audio guides often when they come into museums now. Do you feel that that's something that, as a historic institution at the British Museum, you need to harness?
We do that. We do an awful lot of audio guides. We do a great deal digitally to make the collection available. And in fact, this gallery is one of the most advanced in that way. We have beautiful little films which are silent and rather sophisticated, which show you where a particular object was in the smoking room at Wadsden Manor when Ferdinand owned it, and then details of the object unfurling, or an Arabic inscription translated and peeled off, and things of this kind. On the web, we have rather good games. We have two free apps. There's a lovely one for families called Baron Ferdinand's Challenge, where Baron Ferdinand encourages you to collect and make your own collection and arrange it like this one, so you can integrate your own objects amongst the ones here. We do all sorts of things. And in fact, I did a Facebook Live last week, which I think has something like 30,000 viewers for South America and Asia. Wonderful questions came in while I was doing it. So we do lots of different things, but I think the main purpose of the gallery is to reward close looking. And everything we do, whether it's the lighting or a film or an audio guide or even a label, is to help you see and understand a little bit better what you are looking at. So if the gallery is to succeed, that's how it might do it.
Great. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much to Dora Thornton for a wonderful article and a wonderful podcast in the Oldie February magazine.
Thank you.